podcast.
Those of us who live in Argyll and Bute know that it's our communities that really make the area. And so in this conversation, I'm really pleased to be able to highlight another community group that's doing so many great projects. And that's the Mull and Iona Community Trust. And here with me today to talk about it is General Manager Maury Finch.
Hi, Maury. Thank you very much for joining me today. And perhaps you can kick us off by telling everybody a little bit more about Mull and Iona Community Trust and the work you get involved in.
Okay, I guess the starting point is when we were set up in 1997 after an island-wide consultation of the residents of Mull and Iona about what was important for the island life and how the residents wanted it to be shaped in the future. So to cut a long story short, one of the outcomes from the consultation was that the islands wanted an organisation which could work hand in glove with other statutory stakeholders like Argyll and Bute Council and like the government, and address some of the issues which were falling between the cracks. So it's an organisation which is led by the community, working for the community directly. So MICT is a Scottish charity. It's a company limited by guarantee. It's run entirely by unpaid volunteer directors who are all residents on the island. And since 1997, it's grown from having a single employee to currently having around 25 staff, variously employed on full-time and part-time contracts and even some on zero-hours contracts. So we've got about 13 full-time equivalent staff at the moment. So we are a fairly significant employer on the island. And we're involved in a vast range of different activities. And perhaps one of the most visible is Island Castaways Charity Shop and MESS. And MESS stands for Mull Environmentally Sensitive Solutions. And as its name suggests there, it's pretty much about recycling and trying to improve the sustainability, the environmental sustainability of our way of life on the island. So Island Castaways, the main flagship shop is in Craigneure. But the van that we have driving around the island collecting recyclable materials from island businesses and servicing the textile banks in the different villages is also perhaps quite visible to the general public as well. And I think some people aren't aware that MESS and Castaways is actually part of MICT. And I think that's just because it's kind of almost taken for granted now, but it's part of the island way of life.
I mean, I would say you're probably quite unique in, you know, just how many, you know, the size of the trust, I suppose, and you talk about 13 employees and, I must admit, I mean, obviously it predates my time. I don't know what the very first project, but I mean, you've got quite a range where you're involved in housing and business sites, and you recently took over operating the toilets at Calgary Bay and things as well. So it's grown quite a lot in that time, in the breadth of stuff that you've got involved in.
Yes, you know, from my perspective, you know, I think that some of the projects are particularly noteworthy in that they are very small scale, but in every respect, other than monetary, they are incredibly valuable. And I'm thinking here of projects like More Musical Minds, which we helped a group of volunteers to establish 6 or 7 years ago, and it's a project that's set up specifically to support people living with dementia or Parkinson's disease or recovering from a stroke, or simply that they're isolated and lonely. And it involves bringing volunteers together who play musical instruments, and we have a choir leader who helps put song sheets together. And, you know, the satisfaction that I get when I see that group meeting and the smiles on the faces from the people when they arrive, being pretty nervous and in some cases actually quite stressed and scared, to seeing them sitting down with a cup of tea and a piece of cake and starting to sing, and you just see them just becoming happy and content, that, you know, that change is pretty emotional, to be honest. And like I say, it's a very low cost activity. It's one that we manage to support through local fundraising and external grant funding it at a small scale. But it's incredibly valuable, not just to the people who, the service users who come, but also to the volunteers as well who make it happen. So we've got at one end of the scale, you know, where it's I don't know, £2,000 or £3,000 a year to keep it running. And at the other end of the scale, you mentioned there the business park that we've developed in Tobermory, Nonneveld Park, which we couldn't have done without the help of the Economic Development Department at the council and from Scottish Government. You know, that's a £2 million plus project, all about trying to bring in new employment opportunities for North Mull, to provide growth opportunities for existing businesses and opportunities for new businesses to start up in their own premises, as well as generating income, unrestricted income, which can support the charitable work of MICT. So there's a whole range of projects that we're involved with, you know, from very small scale but incredibly valuable, socially valuable, to large scale capital projects at the other end of the scale.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's such a fantastic one to mention, and you know, sometimes I think those ones that seem perhaps smaller projects, you just have an immense impact that improves quality of life, and that's such an important measure when we look at all of these things, you know, and arguably more valuable than some of the bricks and mortar projects. I mean, they all have their role, but you know, you're right to flag that. I think is sometimes people think they've got to do something really big to make a difference, and actually something like that can be transformational in its own way within a community.
Indeed, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, there's another.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there's a similar project that you know, is relatively low cost but high social value, and that's the Overferry Community Transport Service. So this was based originally around a 17-seat minibus that we acquired with a grant from the Green Bus Investment Fund from Scottish Government. And it took a 17-seat minibus, converted it to include a hydraulic wheelchair lift, so that's reduced its capacity, its seating capacity, to 9 seats. And it's been operating since 2014 in the Ulver Ferry area and covering the whole of Northern Mull. And the hydraulic wheelchair lift, because it's a machine that carries people in wheelchairs, it has to be inspected every 6 months by a competent engineer who travels across from Cumbernauld. And that's a cost per visit of something like £300. So it costs about £600 a year. The wheelchair lift is perhaps used 20 or 30 times a year. And it's that therefore works out at a very, very expensive wheelchair lift. But its value is pretty much immeasurable because it's the only opportunity in some cases that isolated residents get to be able to travel from their home because of mobility issues that they have, to be able to travel from the home, whether it be for medical appointments, to get their hair done, or indeed just to go to, in normal times, to go to a Kaylee or a local lunch club, you know, for elderly people. So there's, again, you know, to be able to see the smile and to get the feedback from people when they are able to go out of the home where they're housebound normally, you know, it's tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. It must be fantastic for the team involved in all of these things to see that impact that they're able to have in a very targeted local way. And what do you think has made MIT so successful? You know, because, you know, as I've said, I think, you know, you are, you know, fairly unique in that breadth of project, the different sizes of project, and, you know, you appear to be on a very stable and to have sustained over a long period of time. And, you know, not everybody manages to achieve that.
No, I think it's there are several factors. You know, one is the organisation from top to bottom has a can-do attitude, almost to the point of fault, where we are normally we're stretched and we're overstretched. If somebody gets in touch to ask for help, then by and large, you know, we do help as much as we possibly can. In some cases, the help is simply signposting to other organisations, but quite often it's involving us in solving the problems that people are faced with. So, you know, that's it does become problematic sometimes when we are juggling a number of balls at one particular time, and, you know, a new opportunity comes up, a new problem comes up for us to get involved with, and resources are often stretched at that point. But, you know, the way that we address it is to find a way to secure the resources, whether it's staff time or whether it's revenue funding for somebody or whether it's advice. We try and find a way to facilitate the resources that are needed simply by going out and talking with local authority, with Scottish Government, with UK Government, with the big lottery, you know, just to see how we can bring in those resources to the island. You know, conversely, if we were to take the view that, you know, we're 100% at capacity and there's nothing else that we can take on, then I think people would stop coming to us because they, you know, they would feel that, you know, we are overloaded and we can't help with new problems. So I think that's the secret, Pippa. It's about having a can-do attitude and trying to find a way to make sure that we can always help people when they seek help.
Is there any advice you'd give to groups who are setting up or perhaps in the very sort of early stages of, you know, how to do that in a realistic way from perhaps small beginnings?
Yeah, I think I think it's important to understand that it's almost certain that you're not the first to tread that path. There is help available, there is advice available, there are people out there who, like as not, will be delighted to take a phone call to find that there's somebody who's following in their footsteps. And in our experience, you know, when we've been asking for help in that respect from people who've preceded us on a particular subject, other organisations and ourselves are more than happy to provide the benefit of our own experience, not just, you know, about what is positive, but about, you know, the issues that we've learned from our mistakes, about, you know, what we wouldn't repeat. So there are organisations out there. There's an umbrella organisation called Development Trust Association Scotland, and I would strongly advocate membership of that organisation, because there's an awful lot of shared knowledge available through networks like that. So I think it's have the confidence to reach out to other groups and organisations like Development Trust Association Scotland, like Rural Housing Scotland, like Community Land Scotland, and indeed the council's own community development team, who've got lots of local knowledge about different groups in the area, you know, ploughing the same sort of furrow.
And I know you and your team are very generous in helping out others from your experience. So it's, you know, you definitely, I know for a fact, practice what you preach in that sense. And your team's been involved through COVID in providing community support as well. So tell us a bit more about that.
Yes, the whole community on Mull & Iona, I think in common with elsewhere in the UK, to be frank, the whole community really did pull together, and new volunteers came out and proactively looked for ways that they could help within the communities. So what we found was that we were working alongside new groups of volunteers and other existing groups and organisations. So there was a real strength of community spirit, which meant that, for example, the Over Ferry Community Transport Scheme could integrate with other volunteer groups of drivers, helping to distribute groceries to all sorts of people in all sorts of locations around the island, particularly people who were isolating because of underlying health conditions, but also because generally everybody was being discouraged from moving out and about. So distribution of groceries, distribution of prescriptions and so on, simply checking on people and helping make sure that you know, from a mental well-being perspective, they were in a good place, making sure that physically they weren't unwell. You know, there was one instance where one of our bus drivers happened on a resident who was very unwell, and we had to call out an ambulance and, you know, get the emergency services involved. And heaven forbid, you know, what would have happened had the bus driver not knocked on the door just to make sure that the person was okay, you know, because some of these points of contact could be only once a week, so it's dreadful to think what may have happened otherwise without those volunteers being involved.
Yeah,
we've also been instrumental in helping bring in, you know, a significant amount of financial support to the island through external grant funding, as well as our own in-house access to the Waterfall Fund, which, you know, has put in tens of thousands of pounds of support to local communities, helping to cover volunteer expenses, and latterly to to provide a winter hardship fund for local residents who are, you know, particularly finding it difficult with the lost income because of the pandemic and the lockdown that's resulted from it.
Yeah, I mean the support that community groups like your own provided in just getting food out, and as you say, just those making sure people had some contact, or you know, what a fantastic example of the work of your driver there. I mean, I've continued to say it, but I can't say it enough, the massive thank you to all the volunteers that have got involved, because certainly the work, you know, we've done, or and the helpline, you couldn't operate without all the community groups that were working actually out in the local areas, getting food and supplies to people. And I think that's one of the real plus points for me about Argyll, that level of community spirit. And I know lots of people have been doing things across the UK and Scotland, but I think, you know, it's something that is quite special in Argyll, the level of support that people provide to each other and continue to do. Is just, it's blown my mind every time we think of it, but particularly last summer, and people continue to do that right through the winter. It's just been amazing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's quite humbling, and it makes you proud to be part of it, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned the funding, but that's a big task for MICT acting as one of the anchor organisations to distribute that funding to other groups. Is, you know, that's quite a big task as well, but and all done at really short notice. You know, we forget now just how fast moving things were last summer, and how quickly all that money had to be got out to groups that needed it to keep things running. So
you're right there. I can remember when, I can remember when the council's community food team was established, and you know, I think behind the scenes that there was a lot that we as a general public didn't appreciate. But my understanding is that council officers were redeployed to help manage the distribution of all the food parcels. So, you know, it might have been a school teacher on the other end of the phone that we were dealing with. But, you know, I think the way that everybody pulled together there, you know, was fantastic. So there was a very large logistics operation where the council was initially sending over van loads of food parcels, and different groups and organisations on the island were meeting the van in Craigneure and just distributing it in between, whether it was our community bus or somebody's car or the funeral director's van. You know, everybody was just mucking in, and you know, the parcels were getting distributed even before some people knew they were supposed to be getting one. You know, the parcel was arriving there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it could have been teachers or daycare workers or you know, some of our marine staff, all of those sort of teams working with your group and others to do it. I mean, I think it, you know, taking your terminology, you talk about can-do attitude in action, that sort of from a standing start to completely new service delivering across the whole of Argyll and Bute, you know, within weeks is, you know, to real partnership working, I think, just shows what's possible. And I mean, that's quite a tall order, you know, for everybody that's been involved in it over a sustained period. So how are things for you and your team now, and what do you think it's going to all mean for the future?
Well, essentially, the majority of the project staff are able to and are working from home, so it makes it it's a different way of operating now, which I think is becoming normalised. So that, you know, it is almost business as usual now. We have 3 times a week we have a team meeting, and in between, you know, we have online meetings as and when required. So the project work is able now to carry on. The Island Castaways charity shop and all the recycling activities at the moment are closed down again, even though Mull is in tier three and non-essential shops can be open. You know, we took the decision a couple of weeks ago that, you know, for the benefit of our staff, our volunteers and the customers, that we probably should close down altogether. So that side of the business has stopped again, you know, which is pretty disruptive, but I think it's just an important part of, you know, the contribution to the nationwide effort to fight the pandemic and fight the virus. So yeah, it is quite difficult at the moment. You know, one thing that strikes me is, one thing I've just remembered is the Ulva Perry Community Transport. We're in touch with the health professionals on the island just to remind them that if it's needed to help with the logistics, particularly for the over 80 age group accessing the surgeries to get their vaccinations, if they need it, we'll make the bus available free of charge to move people back and forth, you know, from the houses to the surgeries, because, you know, that's such an important part that the residents need to feel that they're safe and that they can indeed access the vaccine without the health workers having to travel to individual houses as much anyway.
Yeah, so important that everybody gets the vaccine, and a bit of glimmer of hope there that's being rolled out now. And what do you think the long term future is, and, you know, as part of the recovery and renewal, do you see that changing some of what your focus is, or is it more of the same just when you're able to get fully up and running again?
I think a lot of the issues will be exactly the same. I do worry about you know, what will the new normal be in terms of the virus and any variants that come along. Will it settle down to what we treat as normal in terms of flu? You know, where there is an annual flu jab for the current version of the virus of flu. Will it be the same for COVID? Or, you know, will it be, you know, slightly more dramatic than that, where, you know, we can't develop a virus in time and we have to go through further iterations of a complete lockdown? But going back to the sort of main issues in the community development plans that we've prepared previously after extensive consultations, the single highest priority by far is lack of affordable housing. And we are aware that the issue has been heightened by COVID, by people from the mainland looking for a more socially distant environment in which to live and work. Mm. So we might be getting people coming to the remote areas, the remote rural areas that we live in now, from urban areas on the mainland, and they bring with them, you know, a higher degree of wealth, which means that they're able to push up even further the already elevated house value on the islands. So, you know, what was you know, a pretty acute problem is getting even more acute now, where houses are, properties are being sold without even the purchasers having the opportunity to visit in person. You know, they've done it on the basis of photographs and video tours, rather than actually coming up and having a look themselves. And you know, it's quite astonishing that people are wealthy enough to be able to do that. You know, put that money at risk in that way. But it just makes the work that we're trying to do for affordable housing so much more important. You know, in terms of the sustainability of the island communities.
Yeah, that housing one's going to be a real quandary, I think. We had long-standing objective of growing the population, but you're quite right. It needs to be done in a sustainable way that doesn't price out local people, and it's a real challenge, I think, that we're going to have to focus on as we work through all of this. But certainly, I'm sure the contribution that Mull and Iona Community Trust make will continue to be a significant one on the island, because being led by islanders for islanders is absolutely fundamental, and I think that's obviously been part of your success, Maury, and let's hope for many more years of that to come. So thank you very much.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a pleasure.
I hope that's given you a little bit more of an insight into the massive range of projects that Mick get involved in, and just get a sense of how much community is at the heart of what they do. If you're interested in finding out a little bit more, check out their website at mick.co.uk. And thank you again to Maury for his time in just sharing a little bit about what they do on Mull and Iona.
Pippa's Podcast.